Okay, Karen will be getting with us shortly. I'll go ahead and introduce myself. My name is Melinda Garish, and I'm your host tonight. And I'm from Shirley, Indiana. My husband and I, we own Cutting Up Stables, which is a horse motel here in Indiana. And anytime you're in our area, we'd love to have you stop by. Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Awesome.
All right.
Well, we welcome everybody tonight to the teleseminar with Karen Scholl. And as many of you may know, Karen offers just a little different approach than you will experience maybe otherwise with your horses. And that's because it's not just about the horse. It's about you and your ability to demonstrate techniques from a position of a loving leadership with your horses. So, Karen, we've had many people join us and write in with their questions, and we'll be glad to get started here. The first one we're going to be talking about is bridling your horse, and this one is from Wendy. And Wendy says, I just got a new horse, and it's a 13-year-old Appy. He is a good, sensible horse, but for some reason he is insanely freaked out by the headstall touching his right ear, just his right ear. The headstall has to be undone, let down all the way, placed gently over his ear, then the bit put in his mouth and tighten up at the sides. I don't want to do this forever, but I don't know what to do that won't traumatize him further. I'm having the vet out to make sure that there's nothing physically wrong. The seller told me about this, though, so I figured the physical cause is probably a long shot. He really doesn't mind being touched by my hand on that ear. He just doesn't like the headstall. What could possibly be causing something like this, and what is the best way to get rid of it?
Well, it sounds behavioral, and it's a good plan to always check out, you know, if it might be, you know, something physical, you know, because it can be. But a lot of times, and we've talked about this in, you know, various teleseminars, that something can start off as physical and become behavioral if it's inadvertently reinforced. So the approach I would take with it, if the horse is okay with your hand, but not the headstall, is I would do things to stimulate the headstall. The first I would do is use an extension of my arm, which would be the stick that I use for teaching. And it needs to be rigid enough that if the horse really started, you know, throwing his head and things like that, I could hold that, the end of that stick in place to try to follow the movement of the horse's head. And as the horse's head goes up, I do my best to hold it in position up near the place where it's uncomfortable. And the moment the horse relaxes, take it away. So you're reinforcing the relaxation. What happens a lot of times with horses that throw their head or difficult to bridle or ear shy or any of those things is the horse gets up above our hand. And it may not be, this becomes kind of an indication to me that the hand is soft and, you know, it's learned to trust the hand. But then when it gets something like a bridle or a headstall or halter or something like that going over that ear, then they lose confidence. And a lot of times it's hard to, you know, keep one of those kinds of tools in place if the horse really, you know, throws their head up. So a lot of times when a horse throws their head or takes their ear away or takes their nose away or leg away or, you know, whatever the body part is, if we stop and go, oh, my gosh, he doesn't like that, then we've inadvertently reinforced the behavior. But if we can do our best to kind of hang in there, not get ourselves in trouble or in danger or anything like that, you know, not forcing it, but just allowing that horse to be uncomfortable, sticking with it and then taking our hand away or the stick away or, you know, whatever it is away when the horse relaxes. We're reinforcing relaxation rather than the behavior of, you know, distrust and, you know, throwing their head up. So that's why I would start with a stick first. Be sure you're online. You know, be sure you have a rope halter and lead. All rope halters are not created the same. I, you know, had a situation with a horse this weekend in Ohio, and the gal, you know, was having trouble, and she had a rope halter, you know, and she said, well, you know, this is good. And I went, yeah, I'll tell you what, it blew me away again. I mean, this is definitely, it's not the first time at all, but, you know, we switched rope halters after about, you know, 2.5 days of a 3-day course. And it, you can ask her, it just did not happen again. I mean, the horse just absolutely went, it was like he understood, you know, it was like, you know, the difference between cell phones, you know, I hope the President of the United States has better cell phone service than I do, you know, because the communication is so important, especially when a horse becomes fearful or doubts or distrust, you know, don't put yourself at any kind of a disadvantage, you know, for your equipment. Get equipment designed like fiber optics, and it really makes a difference. And so if you can use a stick, which is an extension of your arm, then no matter how high that horse pulls his head up in the air, you can, you know, do your best to keep your stick in that position. Then I would take something like a piece of plastic bag on the end of the stick, have the horse get used to that. Then take the end of a rope, like attach, you know, have the string attached to the stick, and take that rope and just put it up over the horse's ear. Get to where you can hang that stick with the string, you know, up over that horse's ear, and have him be comfortable with objects, with unusual and different objects up around that ear. And then as it gets better and better, then I would take a soft rope and put it up over that horse's ear. Like if you took the rope halter and tied it really long, you could, you know, slip it up like a, you could simulate a bridle, or you could take it, you know, just with a soft rope halter and bring it up over the ear and off the ear and over the ear and off the ear. I wouldn't drag it. I've seen, you know, people go in and say, well, I'll just teach them. I can just, you know, drag it rudely across the ear. I don't agree with that. Horses do get used to it, but I don't think, because horses can get used to just about anything, that gives us the right to be rude or abrupt. I still want to be, you know, presented in a way that isn't offensive to the horse, but not be tippy-toeing around the horse. There's something in between right there for you. So that's what I would do, is I'd give that a try. Take your ropes of lead rope, put that over the horse. I said anything that if the horse threw his head would not cause, you know, he wouldn't bump into the edge of a web halter or the edge of a bridle or anything like that. And definitely make sure that when you bridle that it's not, you know, something where the bit's going to, you know, bump them in the teeth or anything like that. That, too, that can be a consideration as well. So hopefully that gives you some ideas to create as many simulations as you can. But, and I'm not saying that there isn't a horse that can't get comfortable bridling, but taking this approach, I haven't found a horse that won't become comfortable bridling and lowering their head and relaxing. If this approach is taken, and honestly, it doesn't take very long if your timing is right. You know, that's something in the beginning. Maybe our timing is late, or it's too early, or it's too much, or it's too little. So that's something that you'll kind of have to fiddle along with yourself. But you'll get better and better at it. Your horse will gain more and more trust with you, and in these kind of situations. And you know, what will it be like? That's my question for people. What would it be like if your horse just saw the bridle, relaxed, dropped his head, opened his mouth, and you could just slip it on just like any other horse? And really, this is the process that I use to do that, and I hope that works for you.
Karen, when I read this question, you and I had talked about a horse out in Missouri when I was out there that had this exact same behavior. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we
mm-hmm.
talked about that pattern that it had, and I don't know if you remember when you were telling me, you know, because the horse would back up in the same situation and go to the right, and you had me take him to the left, and all of a sudden that head stall is on his head, and he doesn't even know it. It's like we changed his pattern thing there.
Mm-hmm.
Would that work
mm-hmm.
in this particular instance, too, or not?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's what you're doing, is you're changing the pattern of behavior. All I heard in this question was the horse was, you know, getting nervous and pulling his head, you know, I assumed up. You know, the horse that you described was walking backwards and turning his head to the right.
Yeah.
So you can walk with them. I can go as fast as any horse going backwards. If they go forwards, I need to take a different approach. Mm-hmm. But going backwards, I can pretty much stay with them. If they go back really fast, they may, you know, put some distance between me and them, but I'm going to do everything I can to just get back in that position. Mm-hmm. Usually horses, not always, but usually horses really don't back up more, you know, than a step or two. But what people don't realize, and, you know, I see it almost every week at clinics and things, we don't realize that the horse moves, and our little feet that we've owned our entire lives don't move with them. We're just not taught or conditioned, you know, ourselves to drift with that horse. And drift means you go the same, you know, speed as best as you can, You can't always go as fast as a horse, and you just certainly don't want to go faster than them, but you just hold your position. So if the horse backs up, you know, they don't put distance between you. But a lot of times the horse will back up. I'll ask somebody to do a maneuver, and the horse will back away from them, and they stand there and look at me and say, well, it's not working. And the horse says, well, it worked great for me. I backed up, and the pressure went away, and, you know, what's wrong with that? So it's something to kind of have an awareness of. Horses are very masterful at getting us out of position, not because they intentionally mean to do it. They just, you know, prey animals are skeptical of, you know, anything new, different, sudden, or abrupt. So they're designed by nature to get out of there. And we have that aversion ourselves. When we get uncomfortable, say a situation is escalating, our initial desire, our survival instinct, you know, you just want to get out of there. You just want to retreat. You just want to back out and get away from it. You know, because that's our nature for survival, is to avoid confrontation. And, you know, whether it's emotional or physical or, you know, mental, any of those kinds of things. And it's the same thing for the horse. So as we do that, or as a horse does that, don't learn to teach a horse and drift with him and hold that position to the best of our ability and stay in that position, we don't realize. That's why I use that word quite a bit. We inadvertently reinforce the behavior. We don't intend to, but that's what's happening in the horse's mind. He backs away or turns his head or puts his head up in the air or, you know, fill in the blank, and we tend to back off.
Well, I know it's amazing how quickly, when you stop doing that and do what you're saying, how quickly things change. Because I saw the one out in Missouri change very quickly.
Yeah.
It's like mind-boggling. It's like, oh, my God.
Well, and that's why, you know, horses, and believe me, I've done this. I've done this plenty. I invented it, you know. But as soon as I had, you know, somebody very observant and willing to share and willing to coach, it is surprising. Once you shift your position or shift your approach, the horse goes, oh, that's what you wanted. I didn't know that. They really don't know. Horses really do not know what it is that we're asking them to do because of our response to their behavior. And oftentimes a response, that's why horsemanship is such a vast study, because, you know, a lot of people focus on just the riding of the horse, but horsemanship is, you know, how you bridle it, it's how you put a halter on it, it's how you lead a horse, it's how you feed a horse, it's how you pick up their feet, it's how you, you know, ask the horse to cross water or load in a trailer or go to the vet. I mean, all of those things. It's about being able to hold a conversation so that the horse understands, respects, and responds to what's being asked of them. They're happy to do it if we're willing to learn to make those kinds of adjustments so that we can be understood.
So, Wendy, the good news is you can get rid of that, and it can. And
absolutely.
If you do need some help, I'm not sure where Wendy's from, but we do have a camp out in Missouri coming up in October. Love to have you come, and Karen can help you out there if you're not successful on your own. That camp, and I'll just go right into it a little bit here, is October the 10th through the 16th. It's at Golden Hills Resort out in Missouri. And you can get online and look on Karen's website for more information or contact myself for that. So, Wendy, good luck with that, and we'd love to have you out in Missouri to help you out there. So, okay, you ready for the next question?
Sure.
Okay, this one is from Lois, and it says, I have a 3-year-old Arabian mare who is very level-headed, quiet trail horse. The problem I have with her is that she is so lazy and continually falls behind and then has to trot to catch up. I know that she can walk out briskly, but she prefers to just ambly walk along. How can I keep her moving in a nice, steady, active walk, which would allow her to keep up with the others that we ride with? Thanks so much for your reply.
Yeah, this is a really common pattern of behavior that folks get into with horses. My own horses do this. You know, some horses have a naturally more, enthusiastic stride, you know, even between Berg and Deb. You know, Deb, he'll just walk along, you know, and he almost, you know, he passes everybody. So you have to kind of regulate it that way. Berg, he kind of does the same thing. It's like, oh, we'll just, you know, be looking at the rainbows and butterflies and that kind of stuff. And you know, thinks, okay, we're going to trot to, you know, catch up. Now, here's the revealing observation in that, because horses can really convince you that this is as fast as they can walk. If you go towards a place that they want to go to, they walk out beautifully. So it's kind of a, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, Berg goes along, and I mean, the tendency is to kind of pedal him all the time. So you're going to play a game with it all the time, because they're playing games with you all the time. So you're going to have it in your mind. You're going to use the same principle of, you know, make the right thing easy, the wrong thing difficult. And your energy, your body is going to be walking at a certain pace. And this is a fun thing even to do on the ground. There's a driving technique that I use with people. And so you walk next to the horse. You have your halter and lead on. You have the stick resting across their back. And you teach the horse to mirror your energy. If you're walking slow, they walk slow. If you walk faster, they walk faster. If you tip yourself up into a trot, they tip up into a trot. I call this mirroring. Horses learn this, you know, in the first day of life. So, you know, because they mirror their mother. And so it's natural for them to mirror others. What we forget to do is give them something to, you know, feed off of. And so, you know, riding is not called sitting. And a lot of times we don't realize that riding is something active. I make adjustments. It's just like driving my vehicle. You know, you don't just, I can't just tie a string. Even some parts of Texas, when you're tempted to, you cannot tie a string to the armrest and take a nap, you know, and go straight. There are little adjustments that you're making all the time. So when you're riding a horse, there are little adjustments that you make all the time. And it might be transition up or transition down, or might be, you know, directional. It might be if the horse becomes afraid, taking the hip away. It's, riding is an active, a physically active activity. So if the horse is lagging, the instant you feel it declining, do something, bring your energy up, swing, you know, kind of put more motion into your core and your pelvis, and so say, hey, we're walking. If the horse doesn't walk, you're going to squeeze with your legs, but not so much the horse tips up into a trot. The challenge that you're going to have is the horse says, well, I just lag like, you know, the old dog, and then when you get busy, then I trot. And it's actually easier for a horse to do that. So, you know, horses aren't lazy, they're efficient. You know, that's the same thing for me. I'm not lazy, but I am efficient. So the horse is going to seek the least amount of effort. So that's, it's their nature to do that, and different individuals of horses do that to different extents. But, you know, like with Berg, who has that tendency to do that, I caught myself, you know, he was kind of training me to pedal him all the time. I felt like I was always, every step, you know, and finally I went, wait a minute, that's not my job. He can do this. I've seen him do it. He can walk out just like Deb can if he has the desire. So I said, okay, how do I change the desire? So when the horse starts lagging behind, I mean, you'll feel it right away once you tune into it. The instant, don't wait for 5 minutes and have him trotting three times to catch up. The instant you're going to start activating your body, saying, hey, here we go, pick up your legs, you know, that kind of stuff. The instant he transitions up, if you can catch it before the trot, you get double extra points, okay? But there's a fine moment in there where the horse will accelerate, but not just dip into a trot, because that's been the pattern the horse has had for a long time. So you can't fault the horse because they're going to do what they've always done. Then you just, when they do that, they tip into a trot, go, no, we're not trotting, we're walking fast. So walking slow is not going to be comfortable, and trotting is not going to be comfortable. Walking fast is going to be comfortable. The hard thing is, this is the hardest thing for the human to develop, is the ability to keep your body active but take the pressure off when they're walking fast. Because we think, oh, well, I have to keep them going, you know, with my legs and my this and my that. That's not your job. That's the horse's responsibility, to stay in gait. And whether that's gait within a gait, which is what you're describing, walking, you know, faster rather than slower. There's actually three different speeds of the walk, slow, medium, and fast. So, you know, you're going to start isolating those things. You know, a lot of times in the beginning, people are just happy that the horse isn't walking without them pulling on the reins all the time. That's your first goal, is just get a walk, you know, a trot or a canter without you either pushing or holding you know, the horse is motivated by the comfort at the speed that they're at. But you're going to start slicing it down and saying, I need, you know, I'll give you comfort, you know, reinforce your behavior at a slow, medium, fast walk, slow, medium, fast trot, slow, medium, fast canter, and even tip it into a gallop. So kind of hold that in your mind of what is the horse's behavior in the moment they get comfort. Because that's a really common one. You know, you're describing one very common pattern. The other common pattern is the horse trains you to pedal them all the time. I see people literally ride where they are kicking every step. And it's, you know, that's pedaling a bicycle. You have to keep pedaling to keep a bicycle going. But, you know, horses are quite a bit more intelligent than a bicycle, I'm pretty sure. And they can figure this out if your pressure is appropriate, your pressure is fair, you're using pressure for communication, not punishment. The only reason to put pressure on a horse is to give them comfort. Comfort is to reinforce the desired behavior. So the timing of that is a little bit of a challenge there, but I think if you just keep fiddling with it, and I'll tell you what, Bird checks me out every time I'm on him. He says, okay, now we're just going to be schlogging along. And it was like, no, I think we've got a place to go. I have that in my mind. How about if you follow that with me? So hopefully that'll give you some ideas how to fiddle around with that and help you. But it's not something you'll train a horse to never do. You know, that's not the expectation. It's just that you'll develop the habit of response to reinforce, you know, the horse, to let the horse know what it is that you're expecting of them in that moment.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for submitting that question. We hope that helps. And we'll move right along here to our third question, and it's from Lori. And it says, I board 11-year-old Abby Gilding here on my farm, who is very social, always calling to the other horses. He usually shares a paddock with the mare, and now he's very difficult to saddle if I don't bring her out as well. In fact, his owner can't even get him out to go on a trail alone anymore. I know some of the strategies for getting him more comfortable leaving the farm alone, that as a barn manager, I wonder if it would also be helpful to put him in a separate paddock. I hate to break up the buddies, and he can't seem to share with the other geldings here because that other boy needs weight, and Kim Anchie pushes him around off the hay relentlessly. Thanks, Karen, for your suggestions. Lori.
Yeah. You know, this is a very common scenario, and things that I could have you do, Lori, aren't necessarily going to change that horse's mind about their owner. So leadership is a very individual perspective in a horse's mind. You know, we see this in human examples where, you know, a mother says to her children, well, wait till your father gets home. Well, it's worth it now, you know, and as long as dad's home, you know, the kids have a certain behavior, and as soon as dad goes away, you know, they're working it again. So leadership is a very individual kind of an aspect in the horse's mind, and what's happening is that horse views the mare as being, you know, his method for survival. I mean, that's why horses become so connected to the lead horse, because that's a survival mechanism. You can't fault them for it. I've seen people take situations like that and separate them and leave the horses screaming and say, you know, well, it's time you get over it. Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, my horses are, you know, very bonded together. They travel 24/7 together. They're in, you know, together with each other all the time. You know, I don't separate that. All I can do is when I take one horse away, that horse views me in such a strong leadership position, but because they go, well, forget about that other horse, I'm with you. And they're not bothered by it. Now, the horse that's left behind, he's pretty uncomfortable, whichever one it is. It doesn't matter, Berg or Deb, because they want to be with the individuals that they perceive in leadership. So, you know, I hope that, you know, perspective gets out there. But I don't know another way to establish your position of leadership with a horse than to go through the Cornerstone for Communication DVD and Riding from the Ground DVD and Riding from Above DVD to develop your skills of communication with a horse. I wish I could, and, you know, people tease me, like, well, gosh, you take 10-15 minutes to answer a simple question. Well, they're not simple questions. That's like saying, you know, well, super nanny should be able to, in, you know, 5 minutes fix this. It's, you know, it's not about fixing it. It's about giving you more strategies and concepts and ideas. And again, whether it's, you know, the dog whisperer says Armelon or super nanny or nanny 911 or, you know, Karen Scholl horsemanship for women, you know, the common thread among all of those is helping people recognize and develop leadership skills. Whether it's a horse, a dog, or a child, they cannot recognize the, you know, they can get into a routine. Don't get me wrong. You could, you know, take that horse out of the, you know, place every day and time in the same spot and go through the same routine, and horses get pretty comfortable with routine. But if that horse is perceiving that their best chance of survival is back in the pasture, I mean, to tell you, I've seen horses in cross ties just, you know, rearing and, you know, doing all kinds of things because they feel that their life is in danger. And it is if they don't perceive the individual that they're with in the leadership position. So my best recommendation, honestly, is to invest in at least the foundation kit. Get a set of tools designed for communication. Get the first set of DVDs just for ground handling. And then start chipping away at that, you know. But I wish I could tell you, you know, even separating them, that horse could very well bond to another horse. And, you know, horses are a lot like teenagers in a way, because teenagers and horses, they want to hang around teenagers and other horses because they're understood. Teenagers understand teenagers. They're more comfortable around other teenagers rather than, you know, other age groups. Horses want to hang around other horses because they understand each other. It's as simple as that. And yet, now I say it's complex because, you know, it's very simple, and yet the implications are pretty extensive, probably not complex, but extensive. But how you develop that skill and ability, horses recognize it right away. And probably one of my questions is, if I owned that horse in that situation, you know, how would it act? And people think, oh, well, it'd act the same way. And then they think about it and they go, no, it wouldn't act the same way. It would act differently because I would behave differently or respond differently to different behaviors. But so the answer to that, you know, is not a quick fix kind of thing. It's how do you change that horse's mind? The good news is, if you have a horse that has the innate, has their nature to very strongly bond with another individual. They don't necessarily want to be the leader. They want somebody else to be in charge. So when you step up to that opportunity, not a challenge, but an opportunity, that horse will bond. What would it be like if that horse was screaming for you? You know, when you went away, see, and I've seen that. I've seen horses become so attached to a human being, you know, as if it were another horse, and not just any horse, a lead horse. That's really why my program is the way it is. You know, to establish leadership, to develop confidence, and gain the mutual trust between, you know, a horse and a person. And you know, it's kind of a big answer for what seems like a simple question, but changing pastures doesn't always work. Changing, you know, you can change a lot of things, but if you just change how you approach the horse, how you interact with the horse, that horse will quickly view you in that position of leadership, and that'll equal survival for them.
And Lori, if you get the DVDs and you want more, we sure would love to have you come out to Missouri. I think Karen Shoup is from Rhode Island, I think. So, and there's also Creative Clinics. If have you been out that way recently or planning a trip out that way? This might be a good time, Karen, to mention Create a Clinic and what that kind of consists of.
Well, you know, I normally would, but we've had a little change in schedule, and maybe I can take this time to kind of explain, you know, what's going on. I haven't even talked with you about this yet, Melinda.
Hot news.
Hasn't even been out in the newsletter yet. In 2011, I'm not going to teach any clinics. There's a couple clinics on the schedule that I am going to keep the commitment. People have put in deposits and that kind of thing. So there's a couple events in 2011. But 2011 is committed to capturing the education and knowledge either in videos or magazine articles or completion of the books. So, you know, I had to look at it realistically and say, okay, you know, if I, you know, go away tomorrow, what goes to the grave with me? I mean, that's a fair question to ask. And it really felt unfair, you know, to realize, you know, and consider how much knowledge isn't even shared, you know, as much as I do teleseminars and clinics and horse expos and that kind of thing. I'm just, you know, really very briefly sharing, you know, some perspectives for people relative to the extent of education that I've received and I'm excited about, you know, passing on. So I had to look at it honestly, and I've got, you know, 10 weeks here, back-to-back events. And so, I mean, literally, I'm coming in, you know, getting back, you know, running to the laundromat, running to the grocery store, and all of a sudden I'm, you know, talking to my husband going, well, wait a minute, I'm flying out tomorrow. So, I mean, it's been literally just, you know, that kind of a schedule, which is great. You know, I love helping people. Anybody that's taken a clinic knows that I'm very passionate about education and sharing, and I very much enjoy it. But what I've had to look at, because it's not just 3 days at the clinic, it's a, you know, day traveling, it's another day, you know, returning, it's another day, you know, preparing to travel, it's another day recovering from travel, you know, they turn around and, you know, I'm going again. You know, and that's what I plan to accomplish, is to have, you know, I have 3 book titles, you know, at different stages. One is ready for edits, one's, you know, probably 2/3 completed, and another one is the beginning stages. And, you know, just to put those perspectives together, I know I visited Monty Roberts at his ranch, Flags Up Farm in California, and we had a wonderful visit, and, you know, I don't know, we visited for probably an hour and a half, couple hours, and then his very wonderful wife, Pat, came along and says, well, gosh, Karen, it's so nice you could visit. Thank you for coming. And Monty and I looked at each other like, I guess I have to go now. It was kind of like, you know, when kids stay too long, it's like, okay, time for you to go home. And basically, it was, you know, Pat really, you know, helps Monty. He has a riding room at the beautiful little rock house on the ranch and overlooks, you know, has a beautiful view. But he goes in there with, you know, no phone, no email, no nothing. And, you know, that's why riders lock themselves away, is because it's not something that you can sit down and do for a couple hours a day. It's not like checking your emails. So that's my commitment this next year, is to take that time and, you know, put an educational program together so that, you know, when I leave this earth, I mean, nobody lives forever, when I leave this earth, what I'll leave behind is a very comprehensive approach, you know, from my perspective on horsemanship. And my way isn't the only way, and anybody who says their way is the only way is, you know, there's trouble brewing already, but it is a unique perspective, and it's a way of approaching horses that, you know, maybe, you know, people haven't considered. So it's very important to me that that is gathered and put in a format that's easily understood. You know, I get a lot of comments on my videos. You know, probably the one I'm most proud of is that people watch my videos and they say, gosh, I've got a lot of people's videos, but the way you explain it, I can actually go out and do it. You know, and I invest in videos. You know, I want to learn everything I can about horses. And but I'll tell you what, I've watched a lot of videos, I've read a lot of books, and then I go out to my horse, and my horse looks at me, and I look at my horse, and the horse goes, you've been watching videos again, huh? And I go, well, yeah. And it's like, oh, they're not working. You should go back inside and watch them again. And, you know, you should watch them again. I know that there have been people that I've studied with over the years, very masterful. You know, some are passed away nowadays. But, you know, I'd read whole books and go, I have no idea what they're talking about. You know, and I'll tell you what, if that doesn't make you feel, you know, half stupid, you know, you're like, boy, you're looking around like, oh, I guess other people get it. I mean, it's a book, so, you know. But it's something that you go back to. You know, education to me is not a competitive industry. We should have libraries, whole libraries of books, whole libraries of videos. A lot of people have, you know, a whole wall of horse books, but they'll have, you know, one or two, you know, sets of DVDs and educational DVDs. I don't agree with that. The videos, you know, as I'm writing books, I'm going, okay, how do I take photographs to show you, you know, what exactly to do? It's very difficult. Videos are much easier to give you that visual information, you know, for that learning process. So that's my commitment this next year. So in 2011, I won't be doing any clinics. So the Create a Clinic is something that will start up again in 2012. You know, unless the end of the world happens. I kind of think that's kind of ironic that I'm busy until the end of the world, you know. But yeah. If the world doesn't go away, then can you believe we're in 2012 already, you know?
It's crazy.
You look at that and just go, oh, that's way out there. But, you know, here we are.
I know we talked about that this summer, Karen, and I really appreciate it, and I know others do too, you acknowledging and realizing the need for this and being willing to take time out of maybe even your own personal agenda here to kind of come back and give us this information so that, you know, my granddaughter has this information in her hands, and she's four, and she's already a Karen fan.
Right.
So, you know, I appreciate
Well, and there's so many things, you know, Melinda, you've seen, you know, a lot of different products that, you know, other people haven't seen simply because, you know, there isn't a catalog, you know. And I guess I could hire, an office staff, you know, to put all these things together. You know, but really at this point it's, you know, it's Joanne. She's helping setting up clinics and things. And, you know, I'm not really in a position to put a whole office staff together and put all that. So, you know, nobody's going to write the book. Nobody's going to, you know, shoot the videos. Nobody's going to do that, Mark and myself. And so, you know, I had to just look at it and say, I love teaching the clinics, but I'm helping the few at the expense of the many. And so I have to really put those things in place. And believe me, I'll be back out there. I mean, I almost cried when I finished up my clinic in Ohio this week, and I was like, I'm not going to see them next year. it's sad for me because I get so excited when, you know, to me it's immediate satisfaction because I see somebody get it right then. Now, I get emails and, you know, comments and things from people that say, oh my gosh, I watched your DVDs, I got it, my horse is loading in the trailer, you know, wonderful feedback, I really appreciate that. But there is no better feeling than when you're standing right there and somebody is loading their horse in the trailer and, you know, you can just see that they know what to do and they will keep that ability with them for the rest of their life. You know, that's the thing about muscle memory. It's like riding a bicycle. Once you can do it, and I can't imagine, you know, I don't have kids, and I don't remember ever teaching a child to ride a bicycle, but you can tell, like, once they can ride it, once they crash three times each side, then their brain calibrates where the middle is, and it's been a long time since I've ridden a bicycle, but I know that I could take a bicycle and get on it and go ride it, because once you get that inside of you, muscle memory is a very funny thing. Once you get that inside you, you'll have it for your entire life, and, you know, that's the good news. Oftentimes in the clinic, what it challenges people is old muscle memory. So if people have a muscle memory of, you know, fill in the blank, replacing that and developing new muscle memory is actually harder than if they didn't have one to begin with. So when people, you know, it's just like horses. The untouched horse or a young colt that hasn't been handled, to somebody with a skill and ability of communication with feel, that's an easier interaction than, say, the kid's horse who has never, you know, who makes their own decisions. And so, you know, like Deb, when I got Deb, he looked at me and he said, you are not the boss of me. I said, well, I don't want to be the boss of you, but maybe, you know, it's not about coming in. It's not about dominance. You know, we've talked about that in clinics and things. Dominance demands submission, while leadership invites surrender. That's a very different dynamic. It's a very different approach. And I don't know that many people are really, they might allude to those kinds of things, but explaining it in that way isn't always clear. It's something that I've really concluded after many, many years of using the word dominance and dominance games and, you know, things like that. It's not that. Dominance is not the factor that I want to, aspire to with a horse. It's leadership, because then it invites the surrender of the horse. The horse does not have to surrender. That's a choice in each individual. But if I can, you know, offer information to a horse that the horse can consider and value, I've not met a horse, not one, that doesn't appreciate it. And respond to that. They're happy to do what it is that we're asking them if they understand it. But being understood is very specific with horses. It's not just the technique, but it's, you know, how we approach the technique. And these are the things that I'm really committed to capturing in, you know, different formats, in videos and books and, you know, these kinds of things. But, okay. you know, I just have to accept the fact. I felt, you know, like, oh, gosh, I'm just not doing a good enough job if I can't do all these things. But, you know, my mother always said to me, you can't do everything. I said, well, I can darn sure try. And, you know, I just got to a point. I said, this is too important. I can't let this go another year and 2 years and 3 years.
Well, that means, okay, guys, if you've been waiting to get to that clinic, you better hop on the bandwagon for this camp in Missouri. It's like a say-all thing. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, so and here's the thing, too. If you can't get to a clinic, you know, get the DVDs. I mean, you know, people, they don't always consider that. They're like, oh, it's a clinic or nothing. You know, and, you know, to me, the horses and horsemanship, I mean, how does somebody in, you know, Russia come to a clinic? Well, they don't. They order my DVDs. I mean, I've had DVDs go to, you know, all these other countries because the people have the desire that is so great that they say, you know, I can't get to a clinic. This is where I've looked at individuals, you know, that I may not be able to get to a clinic, but I want to study with them, and I go online and search for their DVDs, and they don't have any. I'm telling you what, I'm going to start naming names. If you're out there and you know an educator or somebody who's very knowledgeable and they don't have DVDs, you know, kick them in the seat of the pants, because it's not, to me, it's urgent that we capture this knowledge, because we're not growing up in agricultural societies anymore, and our generations to come are not going to benefit, you know, from our, you know, the vast extent of knowledge, not just mine, but others. They're not going, it's going to go to the grave with us. And that is a shame. That's a shame. And if you think, you know, my friend Dan Moyer teaches ranch roping, and I'm going to encourage him to teach packing. I didn't realize the extent of knowledge that he's had in packing horses, but that's another area I'm going to encourage him to capture his knowledge in. But, you know, his first response was, oh, there's other people, they're really good and all that. And it's like, there is. But it's not a competition. It's not, oh, you're going to put your DVDs out and then that's going to, you know, hurt somebody else. It's that they should have that person's and yours and somebody else's. They should have a library of them, because nobody explains things from your perspective. They can't. They don't have your experience. They don't have your perspective. So to me, it's very, very urgent that we, you know, capture this knowledge, because, you know, another generation or two and, you know, the experts are going to be on, you know, phones. I've got a 16-year-old, Stephanie's probably listening tonight. I'm like, okay, I gotta get a hold of Stephanie, because she's got to show me how to do this other thing on my phone, you know, because I'm at an age group. They should have a training session for those phones specific to age group, like 40 and over, 20 and under, because I don't know. This phone is still, you know, perplexing me, but it's just having somebody around you that can figure it out and teach you.
Yeah. Okay, Karen, I'm going to bring you back around. So we got the one more question here, and I know they're listening in. So if I can, let me go ahead and get to this one. It says, Karen, I have my 13-year-old gelding for about a year and a half now, and I've navigated through the highs and the lows of a rescue horse issue and training. And I'm proud to say that with a lot of your remote guidance and DVDs, he's doing great, except his extreme fear of water and or the hose, to the point of being dangerous. I've tried everything, even professional trainers. No luck. Help. He needs a bath.
Okay.
Thanks. Put him out in the rain.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm sitting in a rainstorm right now. And,
oh, yeah?
And you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, when horses are in rainstorms, they don't, you know, run through fences, you know, and things like that. And most of the time it's because they're picking up on the energy and the direction of others. You know, horses are herd animals, so they pick up on those things. So what I like to do with a horse, you know, and, you know, make sure it's set up for success. I've seen people take horses and go, okay, today is the day for your bath, and I know it's cold outside and the water's cold, but, you know, I do not like to wash my horses, you know, on a cold day. I actually went to an expo, and my horses were dirty, and it was pretty darn cold, and they had no access to hot water, and I took dirty horses out. I took dirty horses into the demo, and I said, I am not going to wash my horses and make them uncomfortable. So, you know, if you can't see through the dirt, then you're not real horse people anyway. And you know what? The whole audience applauded. They said, yay, you know, we love you. I'm like, you know, I'm sorry. I don't have the facilities, you know, here at this event, and people appreciate it, and nobody faulted me or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. But to get a horse used to, you know, anything, sometimes what horses get uncomfortable with is, you know, oftentimes in wash racks, we'll put them into a wash rack that usually is cement. You know, it's usually slightly sloped so that the water will drain. We tie them hard, and then we, you know, turn on the water, and here we go. And sometimes what happens with horses in those kind of situations, and even if there's rubber mats and stuff like that, you know, it gets a little bit slick. And if they panic, to the extent of they panic or, you know, how it turns out, their feet can kind of slip and they lose their footing. When a horse loses footing, I mean, you know, you need to back off. So the first thing I would do is, you know, take a horse to an area that they're comfortable in. Do not tie them. Have them on a halter and lead. Have the rope short enough that you can help them if they start to leave. Something that I deal with in almost every single clinic is this idea that we hold our lead line so long that the belly of the rope is touching the ground. Hold that lead line short enough that if the horse should do something that you're not expecting or not desiring, that it's not a big change to you know, you can have your hand in a position on the lead rope that you can help them. So, say if the horse's nose is facing you and you take the water, turn on the water hose, let the tail of the rope, you know, on the ground or at the very most, one simple fold in the rein. And again, use tools for communication. So the horse and the web halter can drag you to, you know, Tucson, you know, if they want. So if you have a rope halter that discourages pulling, take the hose and just have it on the ground. Even if you need to start with, you know, the water's running and it's facing away from them, you know, and because a horse like that, if they're that extreme, is going to be upset just when you turn the hose on. And so you just, you know, take the hose and I don't even think I'd put a nozzle on it at first. I would just have the hose, you know, bare on the end and put your thumb over it and just run it soft, you know, and maybe put your thumb over it a little bit and just kind of spray the ground away from them. And so you've got the lead line in one hand, the hose in the other. And so if they're fussing around, you're putting a drag on that line, they're fussing. The instant they quit fussing, you know, put the hose down, you know, not on the ground, but, you know, let it drop so that that water isn't in motion anymore. Then let the horse stand there a minute. They'll probably kind of blink their eyes and look at the lips and stuff, and then pick up the hose and start spraying it again. Again, you're not just spraying it at them. You're just spraying the hose. So, you know, you keep spraying and waving it and things like that. I'm sorry, somebody's got a lot of background noise. I want to make sure everybody has muted star 6 because the phone's really picked that up. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, you're spraying the water away from the horse. And then as the horse relaxes, you can start getting the water and spraying it closer to the horse and taking it away, And eventually it'll get to be where maybe you can just spray the ground, you know, around the horse, you know, facing the horse and having it, you know, spray that way and take it away. What we don't think of doing is taking it away when the horse relaxes. We don't realize that we need to reinforce the relaxation, even if it's just, you know, facing the other direction. So, you know, you're just going to keep chipping away at it and then get to where you just take the water across the feet and then take it away. And every time a horse experiences something new, different, sudden, or abrupt, every time they experience that, if it doesn't cause them pain, they will very quickly desensitize to it. But a lot of times what we don't realize that we're doing is we come in, the common things that happen is we fire up the hose, we tie them in the wash rack, you know, they're hand-tied, and then we start spraying them, and the horse is, you know, panicking. I mean, they're literally panicking, and we just try to get through the bath rather than use it as a teaching and trust-building experience. So if you just kind of start even further away than you can even imagine, if it's good, like if I'm spraying away from the horse and he falls asleep, that's an indication that you can, you know, move closer to the horse. So you're always trying to find a horse's threshold. Where's that threshold, and can I take you a little bit beyond it and then retreat away again? Where's the threshold, take you a little bit beyond it, you know, retreat away again? So, you know, a horse's first bath to me is, you know, nothing really exciting. You know, you can take it. One of the things I like is those PVC deals with the little pin holes in it, so it makes kind of like a little veil of water. And it usually has a notch on it where you can change the intensity of the water. So you can back it off to a real soft flow, or you can increase it. And I like those if you're in an area where you come across, like I travel a lot, so I may go to a facility where it has very low water pressure, and I can put that on, and because of it, you know, kind of self-pressurizing, I can get a better water pressure to rinse my horses. And then they're not so much time in the water, especially if it's cold or, you know, that kind of a thing. So, and also, you know, this is kind of the bad time of year to do this unless you're in a hot part of the country. It's still 105 in Phoenix. Make sure it's on a really hot day, you know. Make it a hot day where the horse starts appreciating being cooled off. When I do a horse's first bath like that, I like to make sure it's on a hot day. They're kind of sweaty maybe, or the flies are bad, you know, and all of a sudden they get that water on them. They go, this is good. You know, first impressions are lasting impressions, but we don't always have the opportunity to do that. Water temperature is important to a horse. It is to us. You know, somebody flushes the toilet in the house and we're yelling in the shower. So, you know, horses are the same. Even though they're large, powerful animals, you know, they still appreciate those kinds of comforts as well. So be considerate that way. But that's how I'd approach it, and just keep retreating every time the horse relaxes. You know, take it away. And it doesn't have to be a full bath. Just go out and fiddle with it just a little bit every day until the horse starts thinking, well, this is part of my routine. I get, you know, water on me up to my knees even, you know. And, you know, they get to where they get relaxed, come up to the chest, take it away, come up along the shoulder, take it away. You know, just keep finding that threshold and taking it a little bit beyond every time. And it should be, I haven't seen, you know, taking this approach, and again, depending on your timing of your release and your approach and all those other conditions like I described, you know, I've not seen a horse not get used to it. Now, Berg still doesn't like baths. I haven't found a way to get him to like it. I always say he was overbathed as a child. He's had enough baths to last his entire lifetime. But he doesn't mind it. You know, he's like, okay, we're taking a bath. But, you know, and I have an agreement with my horses, you know, where I'm not bathing, you know, for my sake, you know. You know, to have horses that aren't bathed isn't something the horse wants. You know, dirt protects a horse's skin from, you know, sun, from, you know, insects, from all kinds of things. You see, you know, animals in the wild, you know, going and taking dirt baths. Elephants throw dirt up on their backs, you know, to protect their hide and their skin. And how tough is elephant skin? So, you know, dirt is not a bad thing. You know, humans just have an aversion to it. But, yeah, something, I don't know, and we'll get over it one day. Anyway, hopefully. But you should be able to give your horse a bath also. It's not to say you wouldn't bathe your horse's baths. There's nothing. I love a bathed horse, believe me. You know, when they're clean and crystal white and just stunning, you know, I want to take a picture of them because as soon as I put them out, they're, you know, rolling again. So, you know, something I like to do, I'll mention, is I like to rinse my horse before I ride. The back gets cleaner. It keeps my pads from getting dirty. People say, oh, well, you can't saddle a wet horse. Well, if I ride for, you know, a half hour, their back is wet. So I don't know where we get this idea that a wet horse, you know, is bad. So it's kind of a funny thing to think of that, you know, dirt is bad for these horses. But, you know, it's really something that isn't bad. It's not good, you know, I'm not saying, you know, do that on purpose, but, you know, rinse your horse before you ride, and, you know, it keeps everything much, much cleaner, you know, underneath your saddle pad.
I've not heard that before, so just go ahead and saddle them right up after rinsing them, huh?
Yeah, I rinse them really well, especially across the back if it's a cold day. You know, we're not cold. I probably wouldn't rinse them at all if it was real cold. But, yeah, if it's warm enough, I like to take that sprayer that I was describing and just, you know, instead of brushing. I mean, you could brush till tomorrow and not get all the dust off, you know. And so I can rinse the horse, you know, have that horse washed off and rinse. And plus, I get to enjoy a clean horse rather than, you know, we wash them after the ride and then you turn them out, even if it's, you know, in their stall, and they're rolling right away.
Mm-hmm. So. Something that might be a good time to mention, too, Karen, because we saw this and we took out some of our Saddle Club riders, is they didn't know when a horse is hot from riding not to just put that water right up on the back and the neck, to start out at the feet and kind of work up. So I was surprised that they didn't know that, but there's many that aren't aware of that. And do you feel that's important as well, or what's your thoughts?
Well, you know, when horses are hot, like you've ridden most of the day.
Yeah,
and,
right. It was really hot. Just came off of the trail, and
yeah.
They went right over and put a hose on him and didn't start his feet, you know, kind of put him into a shock and end up colicking him.
It's more, usually you'll see it more if you give them cold water to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Horses, when they're hot, should have little sips of lukewarm water. Because it's just like us. If we go in, and everybody's had that experience, you're really, really hot, you're dehydrated, and you take cold water and do big gulps. I mean, it can cause your stomach to cramp and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it really hits you hard. You know, but you don't want to go to any extreme, you know, hot or cold. But I've had horses in Arizona, and maybe this is the difference, you know, in the heat of the summer, and they'll be, you know, dripping sweat. I mean, just walking around, you're dripping sweat because it's so hot. And, you know, the hose water actually isn't that cold. So I don't know, maybe this is different country, but I've always kind of come in and washed them. They're wet anyway. They're evaporating anyway. But it's not to say that you can't have a horse that's really, really hot. I was up in Oregon area, and the horse got really pretty sweaty. The person overused it, and the guy came out, and he just tried to dry it. He just, you know, took burlap bags and just kept, you know, doing everything he could to just dry the horse, you know, get the water off him. So it is important to consider that.
Okay. Well, Karen, I just have looked at the clock. Time goes by so fast. You know it does. We can talk all night. Is there anything you want to say before we close tonight?
Yeah, you know, I just, you know, I'm really excited about, you know, the prospect of this next year. And as much as I enjoy, you know, teaching hands-on clinics, and I'll certainly miss it, I'm very excited about, you know, what the result is going to be from it. And, you know, I'm just always glad to help people, and, you know, I feel like I'll be able to help even more people by developing the materials, you know, that are on my list. I mean, we have a project list of probably, you know, 16 things, and so we're really excited about putting that together and really appreciate, you know, we'll keep doing teleseminars, you know, if that's okay with you, Melinda. Keep doing teleseminars. I really appreciate what Joanne's been doing to help set up the clinics, all the folks, you know, they've invited me to be at horse expos. I've got two expos coming up this year. Virginia Horse Expo, you can see it on my website. There's one in Virginia, and there's also one in Arizona. And
they'll do expos then?
Nope. Not next year. These are both this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, no, I'm really pretty much, you know, off the schedule for this next year.
Okay. You still got to come to Indiana, though, because Elisa's not going to like that.
I'd say, you know, I'd come and write books at your place, but I know I wouldn't get around to it very much. So,
playing too much, but
I know.
Anyway.
And that's a sad part for me, because I'm used to seeing, you know, people every year and, you know, seeing kids grow up and, gosh, I'm here in Grand Junction. I'm leaving here this Friday, but you know, I've been coming here for so many years, and been coming twice a year, spring and fall. And one year, I didn't come in the fall, and I felt like I missed a bunch because, you know, all of a sudden the kids were a whole year older instead of 6 months older. So, you know, it is something that I really enjoy, you know, on my travels, is, you know, seeing people and, you know, especially the kids growing up and what they're doing with horses and that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Okay. So, well, we certainly appreciate everything you do for all of us and help in sharing your knowledge. And we certainly wish you the best in that new year of 2011. So we want to thank everybody tonight for submitting your questions, and please keep those coming. We'll get to them as soon as we can. Again, my name is Melinda Garish, and I'm out in Shirley, Indiana. And Karen, we want to thank you tonight, and thanks, everybody, and have a good night.
Yeah, thank you so much, Melinda. Thanks, everybody.
You're welcome. Good night. Bye-bye.